Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Georgia Grief, mother of
Ruben,
who launched the singing careers of Matt Roberts and the incomparable Mary Carillo. And you're listening to the award-winning, life-enhancing tennis podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, and thank you to Georgia Grief, their mother of Ruben Grief, longtime friend of the show and a valuable contributor to the show over the years. Ruben was responsible for the creation of the music video for Matt's rendition of Layla, which a truly all-time iconic Tennis Podcast moment, memorialised brilliantly by Ruben. And Ruben, your mum, Georgia, hello Georgia, your voice is something else. Look, being the voice of the Jubilee line is brilliant, but if people listening, Georgia needs to be doing, I don't know, voice of all the lines. Why do the lines need different voices? Voice of the TFL. The TFL? Just TFL, isn't it?
I genuinely think I've heard that voice saying, doors will open on the left-hand side.
Yes.
I can place it.
I'm glad Georgia's got a good line, because if she was voice of the central line, I'd be writing a strongly worded letter to...
Needs a promotion.
Yeah, so we like the Jubilee line, and we like Georgia, and we like Ruben, and we like today so far, I think, don't we? It's a two-parter today. We're coming to you now at 20 past four in the afternoon. We'll be coming to you with part two later on in the day, so don't worry. Whatever happens in the second half of the day, if Alcaraz loses, if Rybakina loses, it'll all be covered in all the glory it deserves to be covered. Or if they win, love, love and love, we'll be talking about it. But that'll all be in part two. We're going to talk now about what we've seen so far on day three of the Australian Open, and we should probably lead with the world number one, Iga Świątek, and Sofia Kenin, who I thought put up a very creditable performance, 7-6, 6-2 in the end for Świątek. I think the tough draw dialed her in, personally.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I was relieved that we got that Sofia Kenin, because she's so good and she's won this title. And I didn't want her to be drubbed out there. I didn't mind who won. I just wanted it to be good. And boy, was it good. She was a breakup, right, in the first set. And you were
twice.
Yeah, you were right courtside there, Catherine, on the side of the court in your role for TV. And
I was. There's now just a puddle of sweat where Catherine Ritzker once was.
I mean, and how hot was it, really?
Unbelievably hot.
Because, like, headline numbers, it's 30 degrees. We've seen 10 degrees more than that in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not. It's one of those where there's a lot of value in being here, because it wouldn't look like a particularly hot day on paper, certainly not by Melbourne standards. But the strength of the sun when it's this undiluted in this part of the world, it's just about okay in the shade, I think, at about 2, 3 p.m. It's pretty tough in the shade, but by and large, with a bit of breeze, it's okay in the shade. But if you're in direct sunlight, which of course Iga Świątek, Sofia Kenin, they're playing first up at midday on Rod Laver Arena, there's no respite at all from the shade. If you're in that direct sunlight, it is brutal, absolutely brutal.
Yeah. No, it is. I was in a nice air-conditioned commentary box at the other end of the court, low down. But it was something else. I don't think I've seen a lot of Świątek from that vantage point, from court level, in my time, because she hasn't gone that far in this tournament, really, to be able to commentate on big matches of hers very often. But she's quite an awesome sight to just see her move around the court.
And I think that movement was a big difference between the two players, wasn't it? I mean, Kenin, to hit winners, had to hit absolutely perfect shots, and she was hitting a lot of them. You know, the way she flattens out her strokes is really impressive, and the kind of shots that we do see trouble Świątek, you know, from other sorts of players as well. It is the type of ball that can do some damage. But Świątek was getting to a lot of them. You know, they had to be perfect. And on the other side, you know, Kenin doesn't move anywhere near as well as Świątek, and Świątek's kind of able to spread the court and move her around. I was so impressed on brand, of course, but with Świątek's backhand today. Like, I don't think her forehand really showed up in that match compared to how good it can be. But
the backhand down the line,
it was so good. Like, so many winners, set up so many points with that shot. And look, I know when she was asked here last year to list all of her strengths, she included her backhand and not her forehand. But it really, I think, has become a much better shot over the years, that backhand. I think she's hitting it as well as she ever has at the moment. And, yeah, that was good to see. And it was just nice to see Iga Świątek tested like that in the first round. I mean, this is now, it's now her 17th straight sets win in a row in the first round of a major, but, like, one of the tougher ones. You know, normally she's losing just a handful of games. This was real jeopardy to this match, especially that first set. And yeah, it was just a nice sort of point of difference about this slam. I really enjoyed it, and really, like you, David, I was really pleased that somewhere close to the real Sofia Kenin, you know, showed up. That was really good to see.
I agree. That's a hill I will die on. There was jeopardy in this match throughout that first set, and in the very early stages of the second set, I was worried about a totally flat start to the second set after Kenin kind of squandered an advantage in the first, but she actually was really dialed in at the start of the second, and setting two all, it's really finely poised. I think Kenin had break points in the two all game, and Świątek knew she was in a match there. She must have been having Ostapenko type flashbacks, you know, flat hitter, taking her time away, fired up, performing a few dark arts on the court. I mean, actually more so Kenin's dad performing the dark arts than herself, but she's sort of,
what is he doing?
Implicated. He's very vocal from the sidelines, including when his daughter's opponent is at his end of the court, and he was calling out while Świątek was serving, or in between first and second serves. Yeah, it's right on that line, isn't it?
Good of him not to go and sit in Iga Świątek's coaching box, though.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Do you remember that?
Definitely not that the darkest start
Wasn't
he's
that
ever
against,
come up with.
I want to say Fiona Ferro.
That's it.
Emmanuel Plonk.
Yeah.
Yeah, went and plonked himself down.
Yeah, I think he's got a pretty blurry idea of what's okay. Yeah, there was jeopardy in this match. Świątek was rushed and was put on the back foot by Kenin's beautiful hitting early. I mean, I just enjoyed seeing Kenin hit the ball like that again, and I hope she gets some breaks in draws, because I think she came in off the back of a run in Auckland last year, didn't she? And then she got Azarenka in the first round, and that was two really tight sets. I'd like to see her catch some breaks and some draws and put a ranking together and be a bit of a factor again.
Yeah, hear, hear. And just on the jeopardy thing, I totally agreed there was jeopardy, and yet I felt more confident that Świątek would come through it than I think I would have done a year ago. Like, I do think she is better at dealing with stress on the court. I think she's, you know, it's still there, but I, you know, start of last season, how many matches she just, as soon as she wasn't sort of winning them, wasn't going her way, she would often get blown out in straight sets. I don't expect that at all anymore from Świątek. I think she's better at weathering opponents' best levels, and also just raising her own game in the biggest moments, as she did in that tie break. She played a great tie break, didn't she, in that first set?
She did. The surge.
Yes.
If she surged in the tiebreak and she surged from 2-2
yeah.
in the second set, and she's such a front runner, isn't she? Once her teeth are into a match or a set, she doesn't really look backwards. You probably heard the announcement there of Angelique Kerber making her way to the press conference room. That is a losing press conference. She lost out in 3 sets to fellow former Australian Open finalist Danielle Collins on the 1573 arena. Did we ever establish what 1570 is? It a whiskey, a beer?
It's an
beverage.
Alcoholic drink. Yeah, I'm not sure which one.
Okay.
But it is one of those.
It's some sort of a booze.
They haven't expanded Melbourne Park quite that much to need 1,500 courts.
Right, yeah. Yes, on the 1573 arena. So it will be Danielle Collins that Iga Świątek meets in round number 2. And look, this was a competitive match. Kerber-Collins, I can see that from the score. I didn't watch the whole thing. I managed to only see points where Danielle Collins seemed all over Angelique Kerber. Now, that can't be the story of the whole match. I think you two were able to watch more of it. But what I saw, I was so impressed with Danielle Collins.
Well, she was a set and on the brink of going a break up for 4-2, actually, in the second set. And really, the stat line tells a good story in this one. It flashed up at that point that she'd hit over 20 winners to Kerber's 9. And the unforced errors were on the side of Collins's game as well, as you would expect. But I actually think, first of all, I was really surprised that Kerber managed to turn that around and level it. And then I mentioned that to you, Matt, and you said, oh, yeah, I'm really pumped for this final set now. And I went off to get a salad.
We changed our lunch plans around Matt's pumpedness.
I came back with my salad and the match was over.
Matt demanded we have a takeaway lunch at the desks so that we could give this deciding set our full attention.
I stand by that decision, but it did not really deliver. Unless you're a fan of Danielle Collins just sort of hitting winners for an entire set, which is what that deciding set was. And yeah, I mean, the stats ended up 46 winners to 13.
Right.
She just totally took over. It is interesting when these two play each other. They've never had a set closer than 6-3. You know, you think they're both such fierce competitors. You'd think that, you know, okay, different game styles, but you'd think that they would just have some battles. And honestly, all of their sets have kind of been blowouts, of course, including 2 here 5 years ago when Collins absolutely sort of decimated, actually, Kerber,
yeah.
who probably came in as one of the favourites for the title that year.
Doesn't that interest you for this next match, particularly the fact that she's hit 40-odd winners? Because
yes,
now Świątek's going to have to face somebody who knows she's got to go for the ball like that, because there's no point in trying to outrun Świątek. It's going to be big babe tennis, to quote Mary Carrillo,
yeah.
isn't it? And that has been a problem for Iga.
Yeah, Świątek brushed Collins aside a couple of times last year, like not even close matches. And I do think the Collins, I always worry about the Collins second serve.
Mm.
And, you know, Świątek's such a good returner. And also that same thing of Świątek's movement just being that much better than Collins is.
But we worry about the Ostapenko second serve as well.
We do. But I do think Ostapenko is better at that style of play when it's on than even Collins is.
Mm. Probably better than anyone at it.
Yeah.
And she is trying to be more aggressive in 2024.
That New Year's resolution.
Something we learned last week. Extraordinary revelation. I would like to declare Danielle Collins' victory today over Angelique Kerber the best that anybody has ever done sport in pantaloons.
What are those? I can't say I
feel,
I saw what
feel free
right.
to at me on that if you've got any other submissions, but I feel strongly about this one.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that looked like an outfit that I would expect to see on the aforementioned Ostapenko.
I sort of loved it.
Mm.
Frilly pantaloons in bright sort of coral salmon pink. It was such a mood. While we're on the subject of outfits, there have been a bit of a theme of the last 24 hours. Holger Rune seems to be sort of slowly moving towards just playing tennis in pants. It feels like that's the trajectory we're on. He's like, how can I remove fabric?
Yeah, so
from my looks.
Certainly bedtime underwear, isn't it?
I mean, hey, Nike, there's a bit too much arm on this. There's a bit too much short on this.
He's gone full Rafael Nadal sleeveless shirt. And he looks ripped and beefy. it's quite he's quite a physical specimen. And I mean, look, he's as we come to you, he's one set all, and he looked awesome in the first set of the match he was playing. And I kind of feel as though what he was wearing almost made that even a stronger feeling that he was strutting about a bit, thinking, check me out, you know, that whole thing.
It can go both ways, can't it? Because it made me sit up and go, wow, this guy must be feeling confident. But then it also made me think about Zverev in his knee-high socks at the US Open in 2017, I think it was.
Yeah.
Where he lost second round.
You can
look very silly.
Yeah. You better deliver if you're going to wear stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And he obviously feels like he... I mean, I think Runar always feels like he's going to deliver, doesn't he? Is he still a settle?
He is.
Okay, well, that will be covered once again in part two. Grigor Dimitrov gave us a real scare today, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a set down to Martin Fucsovics.
And a break.
Just really a break as well, and just such a good pro, isn't he? And he's not going to fail to give you his best. Interesting listening to Dimitrov in the post-match interview, saying he kind of broke Fucsovics down physically, and Fucsovics was struggling at the end with his physicality.
It's got to feel good, hasn't it? Breaking Fucsovics down physically.
Yeah, the guy who just walks around with his shirt off backstage all the time.
Runa's sort of... One day that'll be me. But no, I think Dimitrov, what is he, in his early 30s, he said, I wasn't feeling the ball well at all in that first set. It was getting away from me, he said. So I had to sort of tough it out and play a different kind of match and rely on my physicality. And it's mentally impressive when you go a set down in these conditions to come back and win. A lot of people are struggling out there. We've had people having their blood pressure checked after sort of a set and a bit and two sets and Dimitrov is needed to come obviously through that, and I suspect he'll start to go downhill, you know, and be able to freewheel a bit now that he's got that out of the way.
Bit of a different situation for him, isn't it, than the last couple of years? He's being talked about a little bit. I did just watch.
Yeah. Not just by me.
I wasn't watching the match, but when I saw him go set and a break down, I thought, right, okay, well, you know, he's on a bigger court than he would have been this time last year. He was being shown on Channel 9, wasn't he, as the Brisbane champion.
Ahead of Iga Świątek, Sofia Kenin.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild.
Outrageous.
But yeah, anyway, well done, Grigor, for fighting through. David has points. That's a headline for part one.
I'll tell you, when Max Purcell went to set down, that meant I was 0 for 6 sets so far in my predictions.
David said last night when he was asked to make a prediction, he said, I need a banker for tomorrow. Pregnant pause, Max Purcell.
And he delivered in 4 against somebody I'd never heard of.
Carlos Alcaraz was on the schedule.
It wasn't even that many points, was it?
Max just strikes me as that sort of reliable chap. He can handle the sensation hype.
Casper Ruud, a handy winner this morning over Albert Ramos Vinolas. Cameron Norrie as well, he doesn't seem to be injured. He pulled out of Auckland, didn't he? There was a bit of a question mark there. Very, very straightforward win for him today.
Good, like, low-key good start to the year for Casper Ruud. Like, I enjoyed what he said at the United Cup, which was that he thinks he ran too much last year. He thinks he was, like, basically, I got the sense, playing clay court tennis on a hard court, you know, standing so far back, using his physicality, and he's trying to rip the ball a bit more, and he is doing that. Like, the way he's using that forehand, not just as a really loading it with topspin, but loading topspin so he can go after it, and it's really aggressive shot. Like, he's been really good. He's not beaten anyone of, like, huge note, but, like, even for Casper Ruud, like, just stringing wins together on a hard court is not something he did last year. So, good start for him, and he's taking inspiration from Holger Rune doing his interior design during a Grand Slam. He said he's got a phone call
and telling people about it.
He's got a phone call with an architect tonight, so he can't celebrate his win. He needs to speak to that guy on Zoom and talk about colours and fabrics.
The glamour of life in the fast lane for Casper Ruud. That's just about it for part one. Of course, we'll be back with part two. Lots more happenings, except to tell you about On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. who we are proud to be sponsored by throughout the Australian Open. As we've been saying, for the first time ever, On Location will be the official hospitality provider of the Olympic and Paralympic Games Paris 2024. That means that you can gain unparalleled access to the Olympic Games when they take place in Paris from Friday the 26th of July to Sunday the 11th of August 2024, including making the Team USA house your second home in Paris in 2024 within Palais
Look at
Brongigny.
Matt's face.
Help me out here. Brongniart. Is that a place I should know? Palais Brongniart, anyway, is what I'm going with. Yes, for the first time ever, you can experience the Olympic Games with Team USA house access. Does that actually mean sort of walking into people's bedrooms?
I don't know how far it goes.
Well, there's only one way to find out first. Get into the spirit with fun, interactive activities for the whole family. Team USA athlete appearances, games viewing opportunities, food and beverages, special Team USA celebrations, the Team USA shop, and more. The options are endless, from single day Team USA house passes and sport ticket bundles to 3 to 5 star multi-day packages that are customizable with access to Team USA house, sports tickets, tours, a special celebration, and more. Your greatest adventure is right in front of you. It's a good mantra for life. Just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast, toursfortennis.com/podcast, and select Olympic Games hospitality. Packages can be purchased from there, or a dedicated On Location team member can contact you directly to create your perfect package. If there's a particular bedroom you want access to, you know, you can mention it. That was a joke, by the way. Please don't quote us to your On Location team member who's creating your bespoke package. That's it for part one. We'll see you in part two.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Welcome back to part two of the Tennis Podcast, where it's 8 hours later and we are back at Tennis Podcast Towers, and a lot has happened. It's quite difficult to know exactly where to start, but given that I'm in charge, I'm going to choose to start with Elena Rybakina's 7-6, 6-4 win over Karolina Pliskova, because I missed all of it. I was detained in a commentary box on the 1573 arena with Emma Raducanu, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but it meant that I was completely MIA for what sounded like an absolute thriller, certainly for parts of that match. The only message I saw about it at the time was Matt saying just that he was absolutely loving life watching it, and then I got FOMO and I turned my phone over. I thought, I can't handle this. So please tell me about it, Matt. Make me feel like I was there.
And I feel somewhat of a responsibility because you weren't alone in missing this match, because Daria Kasatkina tweeted that she was unable to watch it because this was yet another example of a prime time women's match not being shown on the main channel here. You need the smart TV, and maybe she doesn't have that in her hotel. She said, "All I want to do is watch Rybakina hit winners from my bed," which was a whole mood.
I think we could be friends with Daria Kasatkina.
Yeah, I think
she'd
so.
Fit right in.
And anyway, so what I would say is I was not expecting to be so drawn to this match or sucked into this match, you know, kind of a total, you know, sort of two similar game styles.
I can confirm this because cameraman Matthew, we were having dinner with him earlier and he had an hour or so to kill and was going to go out and watch some tennis. He'd watched some Kerber Collins earlier and he said, "Oh, Rybakina Pliskova." And Matt made the most dismissive, almost disgusted noise. And Matthew goes, "Oh, no, not that one then." And Matt was like, I wouldn't.
Mm. And yeah, I take it all back because I watched pretty much all of it. And what was so exciting was the first set tiebreak, really. Rybakina made a very slow start in the match, lost the first 8 points, but got her game together and levelled the match, and it went to a tiebreak, and it really looked like Pliskova was going to win it. She had three successive set points, two of them on her serve, missed first serves both times, but on two of those three set points, Rybakina came up with absolute sheer brilliance. One of them was a run forward. I think she's a very underrated mover, Rybakina. And I think especially the way she moves forward, I think, is underrated. And she got to this short ball and hit a lovely angled, sort of chipped backhand cross court for a winner. And then on another one of the set points, she hit a huge forehand onto the outside of the line as a winner. And that was 2 points in a succession of 5 points in a row, and that flipped the set and won the set for Rybakina. And it was just really high quality at the crucial high-pressure moment, which is, you know, one of the things that makes a great tennis match, I think. And yeah, so just a really impressive turnaround from Rybakina. And then she got the break in the second set and managed to maintain it, despite a little bit of a rally right at the end from Pliskova. She kept saving match points. That was quite fun as well. It was a good time and a good start for Rybakina, I would say.
I'm very glad you had that covered, Matt, because David and I were very much otherwise engaged while that was going on. David, I'm sure you had more than one eye on Rybakina because it was right in front of you in your ridiculously positioned Five Live commentary booth. But I'm sure you had another eye or two, if you have that many eyes, on Dan Evans and Emma Raducanu, who were both in action at the same time.
Yeah, it was a thrilling experience to be covering tonight on the radio, which I think is a medium that is at its best when lots and lots of things are going on all at the same time and you can't really watch them all unless you can do the multi-screen, but I find that personally a bit of an unsatisfactory method of following sport. On the radio, you can just go where the best bits are. You can zip around, and it was so much fun. And even on the radio, though, it felt like we were struggling to keep up with all the stuff going on. Just out of the window, I did want to add that watching Rybakina and Pliskova hit tennis balls right there, ground level, is something to behold. How flat they hit it. That's the best I've seen Pliskova play in a long time, and Rybakina is kind of like Pliskova 2.0. She's a better version of a similar type of player, I think, and I dare say she's just going to keep getting better. But yeah, we had I wasn't commentating really on Raducanu, but I'd got it out of the corner of my eye. So you're better placed to talk about that one than me. But Dan Evans against Lorenzo Sonego, they are a fun time, and they were getting high on each other, I think, and the occasion, and Evans played beautifully for nearly two sets. And frankly, Sonego was the inferior player. He was set down. He was having to hang on in the second set. And then suddenly he did what he does sometimes, and he just got inspired. And he's a different player when he gets inspired, and he just took over that match completely. Evans fatigued and starting to cramp, and it looked over. And he hung on in the fourth set, Evans. And then in the tiebreak at the end of the fourth set, he went 5-love down and it looks over. And then two things happened. First of all, Sonego wobbled. He started to get tight and offer up these dolly shots to Evans, who crept his way back into it. And then suddenly he gets inspired and he's looking him in the eye and he's kind of challenging him to see whether he can cope. And he very nearly turned around that tiebreak, Evans, and forced a fifth, but not quite. It was a brilliant match. You know, it's not one of the biggest of the day, but it was just wonderful to behold.
And it was a brilliant listen. I was listening in the shower. Just I left my conditioner on far too long because it was just utterly thrilling to listen to. I had a message from my mum saying how enthralling you made her trip to Waitrose.
Thanks, Ros.
Afternoon.
You're welcome.
Kevin had a shower on site today.
I did, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even know that was possible.
No, nor did I.
Matt was staggered when I just slipped off.
Kevin just
thought
sort of subtly said, I'm just going to go and spend some time in some aircon.
Is that what I said?
Yeah. Oh.
Well, I did.
And then you returned.
After a long time, because I didn't have a towel.
Lovely grin on your face.
I didn't have a towel.
What have you done?
So I'd had to drip dry. And I wasn't entirely sure that the lock was working. And I was in a international tennis media centre. So it was quite an anxious drip dry. It was quite an anxious drip dry. And I was sort of jiggling about a bit to try and create a bit of airflow to dry more quickly. Anyway, I felt sensational afterwards. I was like a new person.
You must have really wanted the shower, because if there had been any concerns about the lock,
yeah,
I wouldn't have done it.
I placed my pile of clothes by the door so that if anybody came in, they would immediately feel resistance.
Have an obstacle
and hopefully
course.
Hopefully sense the presence of
good
another
thinking.
Naked person. I was really worried that I smelt bad, David. I mentioned it to because I'd been courtside Riga Świątek in 400 degrees, and I'd had this anxiety ever since that I smelt extremely bad. So Matt kept on reassuring me I didn't. But anyway, I took measures. Where was I? Well, I was going to get on to talk about Emma Raducanu, but just quickly, since you raised fatigue and cramp and heat exhaustion in the context of a British player, should we just cover off Jack Draper puking into a bin?
I think we should, really.
Who wants to take this one on?
It was epic. I covered this match. I had an absolute ball today. And I covered virtually all of that match, and he was in trouble, was Draper, in the second set. In fact, I felt at the end of the first set he was a breakup. I always think it's a bit of a tell when somebody requires 5 set points to get over the line in the way that he was. And you know, look, his opponent Marcus Garon was fighting hard too, but it was hot out there. And then suddenly in the second set, Draper is having his blood pressure taken. And I'd seen this earlier in the day with Yuri Vesely having the same situation against Artifis. And you just think, I'm not sure there's a way back from this if you're feeling like that in the second set. Went 2-1 down, Draper. Has never played a 5-set match before in his career. And he won the fourth set 6-love. He took it to him in the fifth. Garon met him halfway and it was a good tussle. And then Draper won. And on match point, it was a brilliant, brilliant rally, side to side, both players heaving ground strokes at each other. And then the next thing you know, Draper wins the point, runs to the net in a kind of crouch, because he's kind of trying to hold in whatever's about to happen, wants to quickly shake hands with Garone because he doesn't want to be impolite to somebody he likes, and he's a good sportsman.
And
he
says, doesn't want to puke on him.
Yeah, and he's saying, can you please come here quickly and shake my hand because I really need to go and do this. And he just took a quick turn right and he ran to the courtside bin and he just threw his guts up. And I described that live on the radio.
And Simon Briggs got the photo scoop because the it was obviously very very polite director on that match. He cut away from the shot of the puke, but Simon Briggs was very trigger happy. Yeah, he got the shot.
I'm quite glad that he didn't cut away until at least I knew what he was doing, because I didn't have that match in front of me out the window.
Look, we all know what happens to players, what trajectory they go on after they puke into bins on the court.
Yes,
yeah. We've got the data point.
He'll be saving three consecutive match points against Novak Djokovic before you know it, will Jack Draper, Jannik Sinner style.
But this was big for Draper,
and an absolutely fascinating Draper press conference.
Oh, really?
Because, look, I think most people watching that match and hearing that report would say, well, clearly he's got sort of physical problems, you know, in these conditions, in these long matches, and we've seen that before from Jack Draper. We've seen him cramp in matches. He didn't cramp today during the match, but we have seen it. And obviously, the problems that he's got sort of manifest physically. But he was really interesting on the link between the psychological and the physical, and he said that he feels pressure in Grand Slams that he simply doesn't feel anywhere else. He said he played 3 hours, 40 minutes against Kecmanovic the other day. Absolutely no problems whatsoever. And that was in very similar hot conditions. But he said the nerves that he experiences in Slams means that he really struggles with his breathing. And it really affects him in these matches. And more generally, he said the pressure of the slam means he doesn't sleep as well. He finds it harder to switch off. You know, people are always messaging him during slams in a way that they're not messaging him when he's just playing the tour. So he's anxious kind of all the time, I suppose, during these slams. And he's not got used to that yet. And he said that's the big work that he thinks he needs to do. And he needs to be able to control his breathing on the court, because, you know, you can't be having matches like this where he's really, really struggling all the time with that. It is gonna hold him back if he can't sort it out. But I thought it was fascinating how open he was about that and how self-aware. And, really speaks so well, Jack Draper.
He's a thoughtful chap. Yeah, I'm pleased for him. I have no idea whether he's got it in him to be competitive in the next round. If he's physically there, we know he can beat Tommy Paul. He's 2-0 against him. Mm. Beat him last week, didn't he?
He's beaten him in Adelaide, and Adelaide too.
All the Adelaides. That's a great match on paper. It's just... I don't know if he'll have it in the tank, but it, not that it doesn't matter, of course it matters, but that's a rite of passage for a young player.
He needed that.
Playing a five-set match and winning a five-set match for the first time. He had to go through that at some stage, and to tick off those two milestones all at once, I think, is really significant for him. That he can go away from this Australian swing feeling like he's made a real step forward, I think, even though there's still work to do. So Omer Raducanu then, on the 1573 arena, as the sun was starting to set over Melbourne Park, it was still incredibly hot when she started this match with Shelby Rogers, who's, although at a different stage of her career, she's 31 now, Shelby Rogers, in quite a similar position. She hasn't played a competitive match since round one of Wimbledon last year, when she took a set off Rybakina, but eventually lost out in three. And actually, I thought, among other things, what showed was how valuable it was for Raducanu to play those two matches in Auckland, even though they were just two matches, because by the end of the match, Shelby Rogers was playing quite well, I thought. But she was poor, really poor in the early stages. And that has to be taken into account when looking at the incredibly one-sided scoreline, 6-3, 6-2. Shelby Rogers wasn't really competitive for the opening set. Also, having said that, I was so impressed with Emma Raducanu because she was given no rhythm out there, both by the wind. It was very, very breezy and blustery. Both of them were aborting ball tosses left, right and centre. Shelby Rogers was giving her no rhythm whatsoever. I was really struck by how many different ways in which she was winning points. It was like someone had said to her before the match that it was an audition to be a tennis player and she had to show everything that she had got kind of in one go. And it wasn't the most neat and tidy, clean hitting tennis match because of all those conditions that I mentioned. But she looked like a smart tennis player. She was very adaptable and just sort of adjusted to what was required on each and every point and was so focused and yet also seemed to be loose enough to be enjoying it. And I kept on looking out of that court and thinking that rucksack full of rocks is not there anymore. And she was back to taking all the photos with the fans afterwards. And in her press conference, I got the impression she was really quite moved by the support she received out there. And she'd learned in her time away not to take that for granted. That's not a criticism. That's all she's ever known, having that kind of crowd support, even abroad. She said there was a guy there in the crowd. I noticed this, that she'd run over to give this random bloke her towel. She'd picked him out and run the length of the court to hand him her towel at the end of the match. And I thought, that's not a kid or anything. Why is she giving this random middle-aged man a towel? But apparently, he had been there in New York for every single one of her matches en route to the title, and she didn't know he was out in Australia. She didn't even know when she stepped on court today. She said she noticed halfway through. She didn't let on to him or anyone else that she'd noticed, but she kept it in her mind, and that was the first thing she did when she won.
Oh, that's great.
So, and it was his birthday.
It was his birthday. So yeah, I don't know what it means. She plays Yefan Wong in the next round. She's a good player. She beat Sorana Castella today. I don't know what it means, but I feel positive about Emma Raducanu generally after today.
I think all you can say with certainty is it means she's back on a Grand Slam stage playing good tennis in a tennis match and looking happy afterwards. And God, I've missed that.
Mm.
And I hope it leads to lots more of it, because she's a joy to watch and she's great for the sport. And I just feel that she's had a really rough run of bad fortune. And yes, some of it, I think, with better preparation and all the rest of it, we've talked about it ad nauseum, about the way she maybe needs to change things behind the scenes. But she's had 8 months off to have all these injuries attended to. And I think that was the right call. She looks ready now to give this a proper go. And I wish her the best. I really, it was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is the possibility of a Raducanu Bolter third round.
Is there really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I think your commentary skills might be required for that, David. But we're still two match wins away from that. Bolter a winner today, very impressive.
Bolter's got a seed as well next, I think, but I don't know who it. I don't know who it is.
Bolter plays Jungchin Wen.
Mm.
Yeah, there we are.
Mm.
That's
so draw. Probably not a Raducanu Bolter third round, but possibly. Well, I want to come on to Alcaraz because he's just been on our screen. But just before we do, should we cover off sensation of the day? Because I think possibly a vote or a little discussion is required, because there are two very clear candidates, I think. Ilya Tomljanovic, who we've just seen come back from a losing position in the deciding set to beat Petra Martic on a deserted John Cain Arena. It was all, I mean, not deserted, but there were some very critical vocal Australians scattered around the stadium. But what with it being midnight, there weren't all that many of them. And earlier in the day on the very same arena, we had Thanasi Kokkinakis beating Sebastian Offner in a deciding set tiebreak, which at the time felt nailed on for sensation of the day. But does anybody feel strongly about who it should be?
I feel quite strongly it should be Kokkinakis after the reversal of such a match that he had a year ago against Andy Murray, and he's had a couple of them. I feel like he was due one just to make him feel a bit better. And I mean, look, you could make the same argument about Tom Nanovic as somebody who's come back from injury and all the rest of it, but I want to give it to Kokkinakis.
I was going to make the case for Tomjanovic because she just had such a tough season, didn't she? You know, having had the best year of her career in 2022 and looking to build on it. You know, I remember when she had to pull out of the Australian Open last year, it was just so devastating. And to think where she was, even just, well, a few weeks ago, we all watched her opening match of the United Cup, didn't we, against Katie Bolter. And she looked so far off being the force that we saw in the match today on the John Cain Arena. And as a, I don't know if this adds weight to her case to be sensation of the day, but it's notable. Her next opponent is Yelena Ostapenko, and they hate each other.
Oh my God!
Remember the Wimbledon aggro?
Oh yes. Oh, we need to dig all that footage up.
I think the internet might do that for us, David.
Yeah.
That is sensational. Okay. Oh, that's going to be so good.
Catherine's going to have bought the podcast.
I'm giving
to get
it to Tom Nanovic.
Internet.
Sorry, David, but I'm giving it to Tom Nanovic. Okay. It's the context. It's the backstory. She was the first Netflix curse domino to fall, wasn't she?
Holger Rune was asked about the Netflix curse today and whether he believes in it. And he said, "I'm sorry, but I think that's rubbish."
Netflix did a whole episode on it.
He said Novak Djokovic could be involved in 10 different Netflix series and he would still win tournaments.
Yes, Holger. Nailed it. You in your tiny shorts. right, Carlos Alcaraz tonight got himself in a bit of a match against old Richard Gasquet, didn't he?
Certainly a set.
What was going on out there? Well, a whole lot of fun.
Pretty nervy in that first set. Gasquet was the better player for most of it. And Alcaraz was stressed, I thought, in that first set. He wasn't settled. He was often on the back foot playing reactive tennis against Gasquet, who was really swinging. You know, he'd clearly decided it. And he felt good, I think. He at times, he was the one doing the little stutter step sort of pumpedness stuff between points. And Alcaraz just about came out up with the goods when he needed it. And then he started to relax. You could see it was quite instant, really. But yeah, that's the first time I've ever seen him on that court from my commentary position that we have low down. And again, a little bit like with Rebecca, it's just something else to watch these people from that vantage point. And I suspect he will grow into the tournament, but that was a nervy one.
Yeah, I felt he was a bit careless in the first set because he had so many break points, and Gasquet saved a lot of them pretty well, but there were a couple where he just went for a huge forehand that just wasn't necessary, Alcaraz. And I was actually speaking to some of the Spanish press who were surrounding me in the press seats, and their take was that if they had to sort of identify one thing that was different about Alcaraz in the second half of last season compared to the first half, they were really pointed to his break point conversion. They said it was something that he really struggled with at the end of last season. I do remember the Medvedev semi-final at the US Open, that was certainly the case. So, he needs to
he needs to get that back. He needs to be a bit more ruthless, I think, on his opportunities. Because, yeah, he did allow Gasquet to play some really good tennis. It was fun, you know. It was just such a contrast, isn't it? You know, Richard Gasquet used to be talked about in France in the same way that Carlos Alcaraz had been talked about in Spain a few years ago. And Alcaraz has obviously delivered so immensely on that talent that he's got already. And Gasquet's had a very good career, but not a sort of great career, I would say. You know, he's not won the major titles that people thought he might. And now he's, you know, he's got a bit of a funny walk, hasn't he, Gasquet? And his hair's thinning a bit and he looks a bit sort of haggard generally. But he is capable of still coming up with these incredible moments of genius. I mean, the backhand he hit down the line in the first set tiebreak was astonishing. Like, so good. And yet Alcaraz is a sort of upgraded version, really, isn't he? He's fitter, stronger, hungrier. And he ended up absolutely taking over that match. And Gasquet only really had one set in the tank. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Was there ever jeopardy? A flicker of jeopardy?
No, I never for a moment thought that Alcaraz was going to lose. Even if he lost that first set, I thought he would just win the next three because Gasquet was, well, Hannah tweeted that it was like he'd been standing under a waterfall for 20 minutes, you know, and he just looked drenched and soaked and sweaty and hot and bothered, and Alcaraz was just fine.
I actually had to switch channels because it's making me feel like I need to shower again. And as we've established, already done that twice today. Right, okay. So that's Carlos Alcaraz. Any other major results to cover off? Alexander Zverev got himself in a bit of trouble. Well, almost quite a lot of trouble, actually. He was a set down to his countryman, Dominic Kupfer, and was a point away from going two sets to one down. He won the second, didn't he?
That's right. And
it was a real match, this one. Came through in four sets. We had the news today, reported initially, I think, by Yannick Schneider, a colleague of ours from the German press, that Alexander Zverev's trial date has been set for May in Germany for the charge of domestic violence levelled at him by his ex-girlfriend and the mother of his child, Brenda Patea. A number of players were asked about that situation today, particularly pertaining to Alexander Zverev's recent election to the Players' Council by his fellow tennis players. Grigor Dimitrov was one that was asked, and it was a very firm no comment. I mean, it was quite a flowery no comment from Grigor Dimitrov, who incidentally has also just been elected to the Players' Council. That perhaps why Grigor in particular was being asked. There was a lot of I don't know about this, I don't want to comment more because I don't know the situation. I always stay away from the press in general. I really don't read much. Of course, there are things swirling around. Of course, I understand that on the other side. I mean, I didn't. It's not only up to me who's in there, right? A lot of that kind of stuff. Cam Norrie, yeah, honestly, I don't know too much about that. I can't comment at all. I don't really know too much about that and what happened. So tough to comment. We had Stefanos Tsitsipas. I will not say on that. I don't know the situation. I'm completely unfamiliar with it. I have nothing to comment on it. And who else did we have? I think that's... we had Casper Ruud. I haven't had too much time to think about it. I don't really have an opinion right now. But yeah, I'm not exactly sure how to react, so I won't give you a good answer. Sorry. You can do another one if you want. So it sounds to me like some briefing has been happening. That's not to say that these aren't adult people who can say whatever they like, regardless of what they've been briefed. I realise it's a tough situation for them to be asked about something like that. I really do, and I take that into account. But I don't know anything about that situation. It's just incredibly pathetic, isn't it? Like, okay, well, we all know what you can do to know about that situation. It's all out there. If you're a member of the Players' Council, if you've got a vote for who's going to be on the Players' Council, it surely is incumbent on you to take some sort of responsibility and ownership and accountability for those facts. And this is just feeble.
Yeah. And that's why I thought it was a really good question. It was the same journalist asking the question in every press conference. And, you know, he wasn't asking them to, you know, he wasn't putting them in a really tricky position to comment on the case.
Mm.
He was simply asking about the fact that these allegations exist, which Zverev denies, and yet he's been voted to the Player Council, a sort of position of power, leadership on the ATP Tour. How do you feel about that, you know? And he also asked Iga Swiatek, and she said similar in terms of she doesn't have too much to say, but she did add, given that those allegations exist, it does seem a problem that he would have been promoted or sort of elected to a position on the ATP Council. She said that. So for none of these men to even say that, I just found incredibly disappointing and feeble, as you say.
It remains the case.
And part of the problem, quite frankly.
To my knowledge, no male tennis player or statement from the ATP has at any stage stated the line, the words, we condemn and abhor, or whatever word you want to use, we condemn domestic violence in all its forms.
Not in this latest cycle of allegations from his former partner and mother of his child. No, I remember when the allegations from Olga Sharipova were made. I think Medvedev might have said something like that at the time, that he wanted to make it very clear, whilst, you know, he didn't have knowledge of this case, and he knew Zverev had denied those allegations, that he just wanted to state on record that it's awful, that people who commit domestic abuse, it's awful. He did. I do remember him saying that, but he was one on his own, as I recall. I don't remember any others. I think probably the ATP did when they were making their statements in order to announce their investigation, etc. But it still just all feels insufficient, certainly in this last 6 months or so, since those came to light. It's been crickets, quite honestly. And, it's not surprising, but it is disappointing.
The journalist then asked Zverev himself, and Zverev said, why would there be a problem with me being on the council? No players have said anything to me. And then he said that journalists are more interested in clicks than the truth.
Alrighty then. On with the pod. A couple of other things to cover off. One bit of news today, not related to the Australian Open. Rafael Nadal has been announced as an ambassador to the Saudi Arabian Tennis Federation. He's going to be doing, I believe, opening an academy there, doing some work with junior tennis over there. He says he's taken a trip to Saudi Arabia and seen the willingness and the culture around youth sport, and he wants to play a part in it and all of that. And I've no reason to doubt that he means well, which makes it spectacularly naive in my view. And you can mean well, but also be being paid very, very handsomely for something. That wasn't mentioned in any of the press releases. I don't know that for a fact. I suspect he's not doing it for free. And look, the Saudi Arabian issue, the sports washing issue, is far too complex and important for us to just try and address it now at this stage of a daily Grand Slam podcast. We try and do it real justice wherever we have the opportunity to, but equally it seemed remiss not to mention this news today.
And it is another example of how Saudi Arabia is not going into tennis in the same manner as it went into golf, in a very confrontational way. And it clearly seems as though they've decided they don't want to do that. And also, everybody within tennis pretty much is at pains to try and avoid that. So rather than going up to a John Rahm like they are in golf and sort of lifting him out of the tour and paying him an exorbitant amount, they're doing it in different ways like this. That's what it looks like. You're right. It's such a big talking point, but it's happening.
David, I can't believe you're suggesting John Rahm did that for the money. He wants to grow the game.
Oh, yes.
Did you not read the press release?
I forgot.
I think that's just about it for today. I'm sorry that we've ended on that note. Except we won't end up on that note. We'll end on shout-outs. So no pressure, Matt, but we're relying on you to pep things up here. Maybe you could do them off the top of your head like you did the other day.
You're still amazed by that.
I can't get over it. Cannot get over it.
We've also got Usher. By the way, I know it's your job to say Usher, but I did see your picture that you posted of Usher on the Instagram the other day, and I did think, wow, what
I've got,
gorgeous
I've got more
dog.
To drip feed over the course Great. Of the next 2 weeks. Usher's a very photogenic dog.
She sure is.
Yeah, he, like the rapper. I don't know if Usher's named after Usher the rapper. Is it? He's not a rapper, is he, Usher? It's more R&B.
I'm probably.
I don't know what it is these days, but
not sure. I'm in my
20 years ago. It was R&B.
My sweet anyway, spot of knowledge here.
Anyway, this Usher's definitely better. David, you have a mascot. That mascot is Francis.
Matt Francis.
And what do you have to say for yourself today?
Max Purcell is what I have to say.
Oh, we covered this earlier, didn't
yes,
we?
Yes, that's right. And I feel like I can go two in a row tomorrow.
And you've inspired me because I find myself in quite a desperate situation with dear old Darwin, 0-3. So going sensation has worked for you. I might be going sensation tomorrow. Subscribe to the newsletter to find out. P.S. Apologies, Darwin. Matt, Haider and Soma, how are you doing?
We got points today, Haider and Soma. We didn't feel good about our prediction because we did back against Dan Evans. You know, we knew he wasn't coming in fully match fit, but we took advantage of that. And Lorenzo Sonego got us points.
He's ruthless. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have top folks and executive producers, and I'm thrilled to tell you that they are Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff. And it's over to you, Matt, for shout-outs.
Three shout-outs today, starting with Bart Lesh in Adelaide.
Oh.
Adelaide.
Adelaide.
We're up, Bart.
Hello, Bart.
Do you know, I believe that in the 90s there was a WTA CEO called Bart.
That is incredible, David.
It's a very 90s CEO name, I think. If this doesn't come through, I'm going Ash Barty. That's the next best.
I am right. Bart Maguire, CEO of what was then known as the Sanex WTA Tour.
Wow.
It's the blockbuster shout-out Bart was hoping for when he paid his hard-earned money.
Did you know that Bart Maguire...
I didn't. Whatever it is,
no.
I didn't. I
had no idea.
He didn't last very long. He resigned quite soon afterwards.
Bart, thank you ever so much for your support.
We also have Jennifer Amadeo from Connecticut, Wilton, Connecticut. We're getting a lot of shout-outs from Connecticut ever since we drove through.
I wonder if, is that the way to build our audience? Matt and I just drive through a state or a country.
At that point, we had all those tennis podcast stickers, didn't we? Did you just sort of start like sticking them on lampposts?
Sort of ambush marketing. Right. Jennifer says, my two boxers do not seem to enjoy tennis or chasing balls, but I so enjoy Catherine's enthusiastic dog descriptions every week.
Aww. A boxer that, or two boxers that don't like chasing balls. Jennifer. Wow.
I reckon Catherine could talk your boxer into it.
Boxers are lovely dogs. Quite slobbery, but lovely. Like Jennifer Brady.
Absolutely.
And Capriati.
Oh, you're coming up trumps.
Cooking
very
on
good.
Gas. Thank you, Jennifer.
And finally, we have Claire White, who is from County Clare in Ireland. She says, my parents didn't think too hard when picking my name.
Oh, is Claire the name spelt the same as County Clare?
It is.
Oh, wow.
And Claire says, I was very lucky to win tickets to the 2022 French Open after entering one of your competitions. It was my first time at a professional tournament. I remember this.
That's so lovely.
And she's heading back to the, well, to Roland Garros for the Olympics this year.
Fantastic.
Claire, you're nailing life.
Catherine's trying to sort of not be jealous.
Have
in the
you
shout
got a spare
out.
Ticket? Claire, you sound like you make good decisions. Well done. Thank you for supporting us. Like Claire Wood.
Yeah,
former Claire Liu.
British number one. Absolutely. Yeah. Can't think of any other Claires.
It's two middling Claires. I think we've done well.
Pretty good work, I say.
Claire, thank you ever so much. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to all friends of the Tennis Podcast, without whom we would not be here in Tennis Podcast Towers at 1 a.m. finishing up
early night, guys.
Podcast. It genuinely is an early night, and I'm excited for it. We'll see you tomorrow, refreshed and peppy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.